Welcome back to Troubleshooting Agile. Hi there, Jeffrey.
Hi, Squirrel. So, Squirrel, I was looking through your Twitter feed, and I saw a story which made me both sort of laugh and cry at the same time.
I think I know which one you mean. There.
Yeah, this is one where you overheard someone talking about the Agile software, which
yeah.
I think is
what,
great.
What
yeah.
the heck could they possibly mean by the Agile software? I asked myself.
Yeah.
And eventually I figured out what they actually meant. And what it turns out they meant was a piece of software called Jira, and I think most of our listeners will know Jira. It's a project management task tracking system that an awful lot of people love to hate. And so my Twitter comment was, and then a piece of me died because I was so sad that someone thought that Agile software consisted entirely of Jira.
Yeah, exactly. Which I mean, it's. I was reflecting on this a little bit in the light of our conversation from last week, and about how things change, and how you know Agile from 2001 to 20s later could somehow have someone make that mistake, and it made me realize that it was kind of tied. Like this can happen because of something that we've talked about before, which was this idea Chris Matz put forward. And he said there's two different communities of practice. There's in the early days when there's a lot of uncertainty, which we've talked about a lot about last time, then you have a community of needs, people who need to figure stuff out. And in the early days of Agile, you know, that's what we all were. You know, we were figuring stuff out. And then later, some of those things cross the chasm into a different community of practice, which is the community of solutions, and that's and then suddenly the focus is not on the principles that people were exploring early on, but instead they think like, oh, there's just a cookbook of practices we need to apply, and then everything's solved, and that's the only way I can think where someone could somehow think that, oh yes, Jira, that's the Agile software. That was occurring to me, this sort of we're back to the different people in uncertainty and certainty, and that, you know what, as we said last time, you should behave differently at different times in the worlds of certainty and uncertainty. So maybe there's times where it's okay, people are acting in a cookbook way, but probably they're doing it more often than they really should.
I just wish they weren't going to McDonald's to get their cooking. You know, the Atlassian folks responded to my tweet and said, our reputation precedes us. And my thought was either they just have a bot responding, or their bot understands their reputation better than they do. Jira is one of the most frustrating, difficult, painful pieces of software I've ever encountered. And I tried to explain this to one of their product managers years ago, and it seemed to be, although they were on a world tour gathering customer feedback, they didn't seem to have actually gathered any actual customer feedback because they had no idea that people hated them. So bashing Jira aside, that's a lot of fun, but more seriously, I can see the benefit in certain situations that are in terms that our friend Dave Snowden would use, complicated, that in those circumstances, using an off-the-shelf tool, even one that's rigid and hard to use but kind of standard, would make a lot of sense. And a complicated situation is one in which experts have knowledge. There's a body of practice. There's a set of standard solutions, as Chris Matz was describing, that are effective, and you can just go into the pool of good stuff to do and use it. I had a good example this past week. I was looking at an organization that had way too many developers building way too much custom software for some problems that are really standard and off the shelf for which you can just buy stuff. And so my recommendation to them is going to be, look, take most of the literally 160 applications that you have to maintain and put most of them in a nice box somewhere and maintain them as much as is needed. But you don't have to spend huge amounts on documentation and standardization and improving the code and making it scalable, because it just doesn't matter. And there's a small set of things that are really strategic, And those ones are complex. This is the notion of Kinevan that we're always, that I'm always banging on about, at least. You'll see all the notes in the show notes on what these things mean. But the brief version is that in the complex environment, you don't know what the rules are. There aren't experts. There's not a standard way to do things. And if the only thing you were doing was pulling Jira off the shelf and running your Scrum process according to what you've learned in your Scrum training and what your Agile coach tells you to do, you're going to be killed. Because your complex situation is not going to be amenable to that kind of approach. Those off the shelf standard quote unquote agile practices are only effective where you really know the territory, where you have lots of certainty. And in situations of high uncertainty, yeah, I mean, use Jira. I'm not going to object to that if that's what you want to do. But use all these tools in a very flexible way, not in the inflexible way that my client was using when they said, oh, yes, we're going to use the Agile software.
I think what's great here is you have a story which captures both sides of this. You both, on the one hand, have people who are pretending that their world is, or believe their world is much more certain than it really is, and they're trying to attack uncertainty as though it's certain, and expecting that their very regimented approach is going to work and deal with that. On the other hand, you had this other group of people who were pretending or believing that things were much less certain than they were, and they were, you know, building custom software for things that you can just buy, right? That I like that disconnect, and I like the fact that we're here with an example saying it can happen both ways. It sounds like one of the key things here is it's really important to have a good read on which of your problems are actually complex and which ones are merely complicated, or even maybe simple, maybe completely solved. And that's a kind of like inventory of the problems and understand what it is that you're currently dealing with. Is that right? Is that like the proper first step here, or, you know, an important step?
Oh, it's certainly one of the first questions I ask when I'm evaluating a tech organization is, are these folks using practices and techniques which are appropriate to their level of certainty or uncertainty? And as we noted last week, it's rarer to put yourself in the situation where you think things are more uncertain than they actually are. Much more frequently, you have that bias toward thinking, oh, I understand this. I know how the world works. I see things correctly. And all I need to do is apply these standard techniques. This is why I ban the words best practices from everyone I coach. I just don't let them say it anymore because there aren't any best practices in almost all situations. However, if you're going to be running what amounts to a standard off-the-shelf IT department that's maintaining a bank of applications in a very simple way, then there may be best practices. There probably are, and those are worth finding out and using, but that's because you're in a complicated or even simple environment, which most of us are not. And if you think you are, as we said last week, apply a very skeptical eye to that, because I see it far too often that they make the mistake, clients make the mistake in that direction than the other.
The thing that occurred to me as you're describing that is a conversation I had with someone recently. I said they were just describing what they believed very strongly to be true. And I said, remember, science is not about confirming what it is you believe. It's about trying to disconfirm it and failing, right? You know, so if I have a strong hypothesis about the way I think things are, can I turn that into a falsifiable hypothesis and then try to falsify it? And there's if I can say like, oh, I believe that, you know, this is what our clients want. Well, how could I make a falsifiable test about it as cheaply as possible? And then, you know, try to, and that's the way that I consider it validated when I failed to falsify it. But the natural instinct for a lot of people is they instead seek to confirm things they already believe. And as a result, they end up acting as though things are much more certain.
But Jeffrey, they're obviously right. It's clear these are the best practices. I mean, everybody uses Jira, so it must be the best thing. So let's just go out and use the Agile software. How about that?
You know, it's funny because that's exactly what I hear back, which is, but it's obvious. And I said, well, really, it's obvious. Tell me, how could someone see it? And they're like, well, just look, it's obvious. And I'm like, so you're saying that you see the world as it is and no one could see it differently. And I think that slowly, like the light began to dawn on them, that actually what they were saying didn't make sense when you heard it back. But this is the problem of confirmation bias, which is when we believe something, we will see things that support it, and we just literally miss. We literally, it's not a choice to ignore. We simply don't take in any evidence that might throw doubt on our beliefs. And I think so. In that sense, this sort of our cognitive biases lead people to naturally treat the world and their problems as much more certain than they actually are, which is what leads to many, you know, failures in software development.
And of course, the scientists learned this hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and they carefully and sometimes unsuccessfully, but certainly they intend to carefully design experiments that bias away from their previous beliefs. And so they try to make an experiment that shows that apples fall down and not up, and they try to make it as likely as possible the apple might possibly fall up. Is there any circumstance in which the apple might fall upward? And after only after overcoming that intentionally introduced bias, they conclude, yeah, okay, we got gravity here. This is actually how it works.
Yeah.
I wish an awful lot more tech organizations would abandon the notion that somehow they have the agile way, the agile practice, the agile software, and by opening the book to the right page, they can produce the right result. Introduce some bias the other way, and you may discover all of a sudden that actually what you thought was certain is much less so.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is where the people I know who've been in the agile world for a very long time become very frustrated with the state of what's called agile today, because the idea that it was a fixed thing was the very opposite of what they intended. I remember in the very early days of agile, so maybe it's like maybe 2000 or 2001, Ward Cunningham, who was describing how you should go about adopting extreme programming, and he said, well, in year one, you should be doing XP by the book. And then, but in year two, it should be XP with modifications that you've introduced through your retrospectives. And by year three, it should not look like, it should not be XP at all. You should have evolved beyond it, customized it, learned what's appropriate. And the idea that there would be any set of fixed practices that you hold to dogmatically, independent of your situation, independent of your context, was the very opposite of people's intent. And so the idea that today that somehow this rigidly coded software would be the paragon of what agile means is just frightening. So a state of how the things have changed, and how that, for me, the connection about certainty and uncertainty and how it plays into it, and that remember that where you have places of uncertainty, you should be alive to that and looking to behave appropriately. And similarly, you know, when there is high certainty and you can go and buy something off the shelf, if there is a standard way that to deal with the problem with the problems adequately, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. But this involves taking a good, you know, clear-eyed look at the world rather than just looking at it through the lens of your pre-existing notions.
There we go. Okay. So if listeners, including any listeners who happen to work for Atlassian, want to tell us that Jira is a wonderful tool in situations of great uncertainty, we'd love to hear that. We like to hear when people disagree with us, or if there are folks out there who would like to join us in bemoaning the world of the agile software or have examples or questions about that, we'd sure like to hear from you too. The best way to get in touch, of course, is to go to agileconversations.com, where you'll find videos from us and writing and blogs and this podcast and a whole lot of other exciting stuff that's all free. Plus, our email addresses, Twitter accounts. I am really actually on Instagram now, so lots of different ways to get in touch with us, all of which work and all of which we're happy to hear from you on. And, of course, the other way to keep in touch is to come back for another episode next week of Troubleshooting Agile. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Carl.